What's up, everybody? Welcome back to I Came with Fire podcast. Tonight, we are here with Adam from Thin Line Believers. Adam, why don't you go ahead and give us a brief intro about yourself, and then we'll jump into some info of our sponsors and let Chris shout out Common Freaking Sense as well.
All right. Intro myself. I wasn't prepared for this. let's see. First and foremost, I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. Secondly, I'm a husband and dad to two kids and an awesome wife. Let's see, I'm a police officer, been in law enforcement just about 16 years, and I've been doing this thin line believer ministry since 17 or 18, I can't remember, but okay. It's been a couple years, so I'm looking forward
to hearing all about it too, man.
Most cool. Definitely. Where are you located generally? You don't have to get like specific, you in like Pacific Northwest or where are you?
I'm not too worried about that. I'm in Oregon, so okay. I'm not going to talk about, you know, the agency I work for, but other than that, you know, I don't want to.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm in Oregon. Cool. It's doesn't necessarily align with my political beliefs here, but it's beautiful. So
bro, we're touching all three of us, man. You're the sandwich between me and Chris, because I'm in California, he's up in Washington, and you're right in the middle. So yeah, don't worry, we'll put you right in the middle when we do the edits on this episode, so it's accurate. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
we'll keep you safe right where you're supposed to be. You know what I'm saying?
Nice. Absolutely. Chris, push it out, man.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, what's up, guys? Always glad to be back with you. I got a little bit of got the hood opened up and some stuff scraped out, but the show must go on, and I'm happy to be on here tonight. I run a channel called Common Freaking Sense. I'm a Green Beret medic, a husband, and a father, also a believer in Jesus Christ, and so I'm super happy to have you on tonight, Adam, and talk about all things law enforcement, military, and faith, and kind of the convergence of those things. So
yeah, some America issues.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, want to shout out our sponsors. We'll do our oldest sponsor, Redefine Violence. It is a brand for survivors of violent circumstances, whether you're a law enforcement officer, military member, firefighter, EMT, they are for you. Then we have Skull and Crossbeans Coffee, which is a Air Force veteran-owned coffee company. Super awesome stuff, single origin sourced. And then we have the Light Sleeper, which is a U.S. Army-owned business. It's a light sleeping tent, perfect for like summer weather, that kind of thing. Chris likes talking about it because he actually owns one.
Sure do.
Good stuff. But you can use code FIRE10 at checkout and get 10% off your entire purchase for those. So support us by supporting our sponsors. But yeah, man, let's jump right into this by mentioning we have a Rumble channel and we do lives on Friday, right, Chris?
That's absolutely right. Live fire every Friday night. Please find EST. Us. Come over and hang out. That's where the debauchery happens.
That's
but
true.
It's like we like to say it's like the man show meets like military bro vet. But
for sure.
we always have a point for what we're doing. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, I want to talk about, because I did law enforcement in the Air Force as well for 15 years. I am no longer in the Air Force and no longer do law enforcement. So law enforcement, security, Danuk security, other all types of security. And but I'm curious how you got into it, because my venture into law enforcement and the security world was pretty haphazard. So I want to know how you got into it. And was it a decision that you... just something, you know, you meet those kids in high school, like, I want to be a cop. They got their pants tucked in, they got the boots on, you know, every day at school, or their shirt
Civil
tucked
Air
in
Patrol.
Their pants. Yeah, the Civil Air Patrol kids, you know, maybe a little JROTC saving the world kind of thing. Or is this something, you know, maybe that you just kind of decided you were going to give it a shot and then ended up liking it?
That's actually kind of a funny story. So I far from ever wanted to be a cop. It was never even on my list of concern or considerations. But I put my wife through college, my girlfriend at the time, now my wife. I've been with her since I was 14. So I was working construction, putting her through college. And she got extra credit on an assignment. I was in like my cutoff sleeves, bright orange shirt, right? Because I worked excavation at the time. Okay. And she got extra credit if I showed up to this hiring seminar, this sort of like a career fair, but just law enforcement. And there were probably four or five different agencies there. And I applied for the only one that I could do on a paper application, and it didn't require college education. And
okay,
it was.
I handed you a badge right there.
A blessing, I will say. But I will say it was a blessing, because this is in 2008, right before everything just bombed. So if I hadn't gotten in with law enforcement, I wouldn't have had a job. So I applied and I tested on my 21st birthday, and my background was clean. I guess I hadn't lived long enough to become a total turd. And so they picked me up, and here I am. I mean, that's the long and short.
So that's another thing that you and I have in common, man. I've been dating my wife since I was almost 16. She was 15. And now we have four wonderful kids together. Yeah. So also, also high school sweethearts, but it reminded me of a Bible verse when you said that, and that is, you know, the steps of a righteous man are ordered of the Lord. And so you talk about that, you say it was a thing that if it wouldn't have happened in my life, I wouldn't be here now. And I've, you know, had several experiences like that throughout my early life and then my military career and even come until today. So it's always cool. When you look back and then kind of see those blessings like driven into the ground, like stakes that got you to where you are. It's, I always feel like it's important. And I try to tell like some of the younger guys that when, especially when people start kind of feeling down and, you know, it's like there's stuff going on. It's like, you know what? You got to look back and look at the blessings, man. Like look where you came from. Don't get just bogged down in like the where you are right now kind of thing, you know? So that's what it made me think of when you said that.
That's the difficult piece too, because you don't ever really understand when you're going through these tribulations that this is a blessing, or you know, it's a blessing in disguise, or this is going to work out. And it's all in the looking back and realizing how much, you know, you really made it through those things and which things were blessings. And it's you know, it's just part of those lessons. And if it was apparent to you immediately right when you were going through it, the lesson probably wouldn't be imparted on you like it is when you can look back and reflect and learn from those things and realize like, hey, these people really helped me out, or I really learned a lot from this situation, or even losing this, right? Something I really loved at the time actually opened me up for something better. And that's, you know, that's even a harder lesson to learn, especially in the moment, losing something, realizing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I've had my fair share of that, you know, I mean, my wife's a cancer survivor. I've had, I mean, we deal with death all the time and law enforcement and just disappointment and everything else. And a buddy of mine, he's a non-believer, but he's curious. And so every now and then he'll ask me, hey, what, you know, what Bible verse you got on your brain right now? And he did that yesterday. And I sent him James 1:2-4, which says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And that's a verse that I hate, but I love it. But it's almost like, right, hey, you miss the forest because you're so close to the tree, right? So,
right.
No,
we use that 100%. Pretty often. Yeah, man. That's it perfectly sums up what I was trying to say. And it's especially when you're a young kid, you don't really understand what life is going to throw at you, or, you know, just how you're navigating life and the difficulties you're having really are setting you up. And I think that's a lifelong thing, not being able to see the forest because of the trees kind of thing. And it kind of opens up to the question, you know, are you really prepared at such a young age to do something as serious as law enforcement? Because I ask that question a lot. Is it, you know, in the military at 18, now, you know, you go through basic, you go through the little 3-month tech school that the Air Force gives you for law enforcement and security, and get some weapons training and stuff like that, some tactics. But then you're 18, 19, and you're handed a gun and you get stuck out on post, you know. Do you feel like, you know, doing law enforcement security at such a young age is an okay thing? Or do you think you should have a little bit more life experience before you're allowed, should be allowed to do policing out in the community, especially like not as a military police officer, but more as like a real civilian police officer and engaging with more people, a variety of people?
I really think it comes down to what kind of life experience you come with, right? I mean, you've got so many people that are going to college and they haven't really had a chance to mature. And that's not to say that I was super mature at the time, but I had the life experience to back it up. I mean, working a man's job, making a man's wage, and having to make man decisions, right? And supporting my now wife through all of that. And so that kind of prepared me. And not only that, but as a teenager, I worked all through high school and everything else. I had to help on our family ranch. And so a lot of that prepared me for this. And when you get into a job like that, you either are forced to mature and grow up.
Oh yeah.
Or you're going to wash out, you know, and those weaknesses are going to be glaring to everybody else. And because no cop wants to work with a bad cop or an immoral cop. And so you're forced to mature and toe the line pretty fast. And so, I mean, that's a tough question to answer. Not everybody is ready at 21. I don't know that I was ready at 21, but that's where the good Lord put me, because I tell you what, in those first 3 years, I worked in a coastal town. And if you're not near the coast, which I'm sure Chris is, being part of his unit, those places are, to put it lightly, it's an adventure. I mean, we used to say, people only go to the coast to get drunk or commit suicide. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Or both. Right?
I understand that. Valid point.
So, I can't really say that I was ready, but I got there.
No, it reminds me of a thing that my wife likes to say, because like I said, we're raising four boys, and so we try to parent with the mantra that if you treat a boy like a man, like he'll act like a man, but if you treat a man like a boy, then he will regress back into being a boy. And I think that you're seeing a lot of that in the country, gosh. Like at a macro level, to where it's just men aren't being treated like men. Like they're never being forced to do what, like you said, to do man things, to make man decisions. And so then you're on that downhill slide of the, you know, hard men create easy times, and then easy times create weak men or soft men, however you've heard the phrase. And like, we're definitely down there, cratered out right at the bottom. Yeah. But the thing about history will tell us is that pendulum's got to turn over again. So,
and not to put too fine a point on what you said, but we said it pretty often on this podcast. You talk about what a man is, especially now in our modern age. And you look at our founding fathers and how young they were when, you know, to be considered a founding father. Some of those guys, one of them was 18. Most of them were in their 20s. Some were in their 30s. George Washington was 40, I think. Yeah. That's not the, I mean, I'm 37, right? And the amount of things that they've done in their life or had done in their life, the first world society that we live in, the age of being a man has gradually gotten older and older and older. You know, you're not a man if you're in college, but, you know, in the 1850s, you know, you're 14 or 1860s, you're 14 and you're marching off to war to fight the Union or the Confederacy or whatever, you know, and it's just different, you know, and it shows you too, right, that some of that is good because we've reached a point in society where we don't have to do those things, but it also just shows you how much people are conditioned to what their environment is. And you can always do more, and you're adapted a lot better than you even realize for the difficulties life can throw at you.
Yeah. Well, and to put I'll put an exclamation point on that too, from a biblical perspective, if you look at the age of the disciples that Jesus chose, right. And so you look at, you know, the disciple whom Jesus loved, John, he was very young. I want to say probably like 14 or 16, I think, is the accepted age. And then you see Peter on the other side, and we know that he was in his 30s only because of like Jewish, forgive me guys, I'm got a little bit of lingering oxycodone on the brain, oxycodone.
You're good, brother.
But the age of marriage in Jewish culture, thank you, is the word that I was looking for at the time, would have put him like in his 30s, like 33. And we know that Peter was married. We read that at one place in the New Testament. So, but to wrap this up in one singular point is what's really funny are when Jesus presented himself as a rabbi, every single one of those students, even John at 14 or 16, they were all massively too old to be beginning teachings under the rabbinical, to try to become a rabbi. They were all too old at that point even. Mm. But yet you say like today, you know, in the modern United States, you're like, wow, they were high school students, most of them. Like, yeah. And still back then too old to do the thing that Jesus was asking them to do, you know, culturally speaking. But I just thought that was very interesting. Yeah.
We got to grow up quicker, right?
Yeah,
when the world is that rough.
Yeah.
And I want to run that down too, what you were saying too about how like everybody's life experiences and then getting into law enforcement. I have a good comparison for that because when I first came into the Air Force, my first duty station was at Malmstrom Air Force Base, and that's nuclear security. And there is some law enforcement like on base, right? So you'll get, you know, your stupid shoplifting, you'll get some domestic stuff like that, traffic stops. But the bulk in that mission is the nuclear forces and the security that's there, right? So it's one job. It's very, very black and white. If you've done security, you know there's not a lot of deviating from what you're supposed to do unless something happens that causes, you know, a deviation to happen. So we get a lot of 18 to 20 year olds and, you know, they're put into that and you don't really see a big maturation for these kids unless they're really going through something. Okay. But my second duty station was at Vogelway Air Station in Germany. And there was a unit that military calls like a purple unit. So it was Army and Air Force at the same time. You know, we have Provost Marshal and Air Force leadership. And that unit is off base with German Polizei, and you have 1,000 square mile AOR, area of responsibility, okay? And that unit is extremely high tempo. It is the busiest law enforcement unit in the Department of Defense. And you will see, it's everything, you know, like you said, being a real cop, you'll see a lot of suicides, you see a lot of traffic fatalities on the Autobahn. You get a lot of because you're right outside of a really large city, Kaiserslautern, where a lot of Americans go because everybody travels through Ramstein Air Force Base, which Vogelway is near on their way to the Middle East, right? So you got that holdover, you got all the Army, the Marines, the Navy, they're all going downtown getting drunk. So you got all that all the time. And, you watch these kids come in, these 18, 19 year old kids, and I call them that because they really are, you know, mentally, and they start going through these responses and they understand that everybody here knows their job. And that's the cool, quote unquote, cool thing to do is get proficient at your job and get proficient at your job quickly and understand how to be a mature part of a team. And I never saw that happen really in Montana with the same group of kids, right? Group of people. And it's that experience when you get there, then you understand that this job requires more. It requires me to grow up and be responsible, kind of like what you were talking about. And if you don't adapt to that, you know, we'll find a place for you, especially in the military, because you can't just kick people out. Not really. You know what I mean? They have to do something pretty serious. But most everybody rose to the challenge is the point I'm trying to make. And I, you know, I'm driving home that point that you can do more than you realize you can do even at a young age is kind of the point I'm trying to make here. You know, did you start, you know, as just like that straight leg patrol cop? Like, what were you doing?
Yeah, that's exactly where I started. And honestly, I'm back into that too, as part of my job anyway. Well, for example, over the last 3 weeks, I've had 2 fatals and a serious injury that could still go fatal. So,
right.
But I will say this. I don't know of anyone, how do I put this? Anyone who's worth a darn who I want to actually model my life after who hasn't been through hell.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
And has come out the other side as gold, right? And so I don't want to go through life without trials. Nothing gets better without trials. My marriage has gone through multitude of challenges, and it's the best it's ever been. My faith has gone through trials and tribulations, and it's the best it's ever been. My job, it's only because I've gone through all these trials and tribulations that have made me who I am today. So, you know, you show me somebody who's never been through a trial, and I will show you somebody who's just going to break the first time they have one.
Completely agree. I think that is a great way to kind of look at a lot of the way the younger generations are coming up. I feel like they're not being met with enough challenge. That's why you see, you know, a lot of the risk aversion you see in a lot of these groups of kids, right? You see a lot of them being more comfortable with somebody having more control over their life, which is having broader ramifications for everybody in the country. You know, that sticking with that lesson of going through things, you know, how has being a law enforcement officer and then getting into, because you do SWAT now, or you did SWAT, right?
So I am part of a tactical team. Yeah. Yeah. And that comes with all kinds of challenges, right? As you both probably know, there's the team aspect of it, which I enjoy thoroughly. There's the call type, right? I mean, you're not going to your normal domestic, right? This is mm-hmm. at a completely different level. And so we see things that other people don't see. Mm-hmm. Honestly, probably the worst of what I've seen has been on patrol, but that's, mm-hmm. that's because that's all happening right in front of me as we're going on. For example, you know, a couple of years ago, I had a gal who committed suicide right in front of me. Nothing I can do about it. We've had those on the tactical team where people have committed suicide before we, you know, are able to take them into custody. Those are like the worst of the worst, right? And so I wouldn't say that's any better because, you know, I still feel for those people because they didn't come to salvation before they did this, but it's that mm-hmm. person who's yeah. hurting so bad and takes their life. I mean, that's even worse. In my experience, I will say that's harder for me to wrap my head around, you know, because here's a person who's not a criminal, who's not hurting other people in their lives. And anyway, so the tactical team, there's also kind of like when guys would come back from World War II, we don't see the PTS so much. Where we didn't see the PTS so much with that because there was this massive group coming back and they had the camaraderie. Mm-hmm. With Vietnam, you saw a lot of PTS because guys came back and it was almost like they were shamed by society for having ever been in that war.
Right.
And so they didn't necessarily have. Yeah. So they couldn't really be open about that. Well, with, you know, being part of a team who goes out and takes care of these different situations, these incidents, there's a camaraderie there, right? We come together at training all the time and we talk through these things. And so I think that's also a part of going through these trials is, you know, do you have that core group of people that you go through these things with and that you can talk to, you can, mm-hmm. I mean, you're essentially being broken with them and you come together and you're putting each other back together. I mean, it's pretty cool. Right.
No, trauma bonding is a real thing. And shout out to Dave Grossman, if you guys have never read that book, but On Killing, On Combat, mm-hmm. Are two books that he wrote. And I actually binge listened to one while I was driving from Wisconsin, like out to Washington, and just listened straight through it. It made a profound impact on my life. Some of the stuff that he talks about in there, but you're absolutely right. You know, talking about the trauma bonding and then having a tribe and being a part of that, people that can understand, you know, what you've been through and then relate to you just makes a huge difference. Like PTS is not, I was talking to a buddy about it the other day that was having some, you know, some issues. And one of the things that he said to me was the thing that he was struggling with was not like what he did in the military or some of the traumatic things that he'd been through, but it was a different thing in life entirely. Through some interpersonal relationships that he was dealing with, and he was feeling very betrayed by people that were close mm-hmm. to him. And so what I told him was like, dude, you got to remember, you know, PTS is a completely normal response to something that is traumatic. You, like, if you're conditioned to know how to deal with traumatic things, then, you know, those aren't going to seem as much of a big deal to you as getting stabbed in the back metaphorically by somebody that you trusted and was very close to. You didn't right. see that one coming. That crossed a stress threshold that you didn't know that was there because you weren't expecting it. Right. And they can come from all places. And the only reason I bring up his situation is just because anybody else that's out there that may listen to this, like, you know, we all go through it. And it'll come from the thing that you don't expect it to come from. And so at no point should you ever, like, mm-hmm. you should never castigate and peel yourself off from the tribe to go deal with something. Like, if you feel like you're going through it, like, get with the boys, you know, get back with the tribe. Like,
right.
And it's on us to, like, insulate that person, like, bring them in, you know, and make them feel a part of the group again, and then give them a place where they can work through their stuff and come out the other side. So I'm really glad that you brought that, you brought that stuff up, which brings up a question that I had for you, Adam, and that is, you know, being a believer and the man of God that you are, you know, how do you work through being a Christian on one side and then the potential lethality? I want to give you a chance to talk to people about this, because I know I get this question all the time, as you're a Christian and you're a Green Beret. So it's like, what is your theology on that, or how do you mentally or spiritually bridge that gap between those two things of having to be lethal in your job, but then also being a Christian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one for some reason has come up more now than it did in the past. And really? I like this topic. I like it a lot. Sure. I have my own personal opinion, and a lot of people don't share this one. I used deadly force back in 2014. I actually hit a guy with my car. I haven't had to pull my gun and then use it. But yeah, I did it before it was cool. I'll just throw that out there, because I know a lot of people have done it since then. But yeah. So I have had to use deadly force. I am mentally prepared to do it again if necessary. And people like to use Jesus and say, well, you don't turn the other cheek. Jesus this and Jesus that. And I swear, like, if you're going to talk about Jesus, you got to open up your Bible and read the end of the book. Because Revelation 19 describes this conquering. Yes, he is merciful,
right?
But his mercy has a limit. Okay. And when he returns in Revelation 19, his eyes are ablaze. He's basically dudes wearing combat boots, you know, and he's coming back to conquer. And it says he has a sword coming from his mouth with which he wipes out his enemies, essentially. And the horse's bridles, there's blood up to the horse's bridles. Like, he is covered in blood. And you're telling me that it's not right to defend the defenseless? You know, so I have zero problem carrying a weapon, enforcing the law, using deadly force when it's absolutely necessary. Because one version of, is it 1 Corinthians 13? I think. Yeah, it is. It's 1 Corinthians 13 that everybody likes to quote at weddings. Love is patient, love is kind. One version of that, actually, the translation says love always protects. Right. Okay, so we're supposed to protect people. Okay. And right. We're supposed to defend the defenseless. And if Jesus is so gentle, why does he tell the guys that, hey, it's better for those who keep children from me, or keep them away from knowing the truth of the gospel, it's better for them to have a millstone tied around their neck and to be thrown in the sea.
Right.
And if we don't know what a millstone is, it's like a massive stone, the weight of concrete, right? This is a stone that they used to grind wheat with.
Right.
And then we go back to the Old Testament. Who was the man after God's own heart? It's the same guy that they sang songs about him killing his right. tens of thousands.
Absolutely. Right?
It's the same guy who defeated Goliath. You know, so I see a massive difference between thou shalt not murder
and you
better defend the defenseless, because I will hold you responsible. You know, and
I think
I have no problem with that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I think too,
no, you're good.
A lot of people, they like to confuse niceness for kindness. And like, at no point in the Bible does God ever order us to be nice to people. Like, kindness is one of the fruits of the Spirit, right? But niceness is not. But there's this like, they've blended them together at some point in the modern church, right? And so it's this idea where, you know, if you don't tolerate and you're not nice to everybody, then you're not being a true Christian to them. And that obviously leads into a whole bunch of offshoots that I don't want to talk about with the, you know, LGBTQ community and how they're weaponizing that type of language and everything in the church. But that's where they get a lot of that stuff from. And I like to point out, a lot of people like the, you know, like rainbows and unicorns and fluffy bunny and the little baby Jesus at Christmas. They like that Jesus, and they like the Jesus that heals people and feeds people, and they think that's really cool. But they don't like the Jesus that
Jesus
forms a whip and goes into the temple, and as a single man drives out the entire outer court of the temple where they were buying and selling, and flips the tables.
Right.
And he must have been such a man on fire, just a crazed warrior. These people were running from him, you know. And then the famous quote, he goes, don't you know that my father's house is to be a house of prayer, but you've turned it into a den of thieves. And then, not to be the person that cherry picks verses and mashes them together, because then you get the whole Judas went out and killed himself, and then, oh, hey, go and do that likewise. That's not, but underneath the same theology, if we are to be like Christ, later in the New Testament, it says, don't you know that your bodies are the temple of the Holy Ghost? And so my point there is, if Jesus Christ so fiercely defended the temple when it was a physical location and said, this is my father's house, then to your same point of defending the defenseless, if our bodies are now supposed to be the temple of the Holy Ghost, then would I not defend with the same fierceness that Jesus did the temple, the defenseless that can't do it for themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, what an awesome time to talk about this, right? So what did we just see? We just saw an attempted assassination of the former president.
We sure
did. How many people in that crowd, unarmed, innocent, defenseless civilians, had no way of defending themselves? And where would we be if somebody hadn't had dealt with that shooter? Now, I know that there's rumors out there about somebody confronting him on the roof and some of this other stuff. And the whole thing appears to be if it wasn't planned, it was botched. And I'll tell you what, if I had climbed up that ladder and met him with a firearm in his hand, it would have been over. Even if it was over for me, it would have been over, because, you know, we have that was essentially a hostage situation. Right. Mm. And in those situations, there are certain levels of priority of life, right? And so priority of life is the innocent or the hostages, right? And beneath that is anybody else that's in the general area. Sorry, but law enforcement comes in at the very, very bottom.
Right.
You know, and
that's the point.
Not quite as low as the hostage taker. However, the point is, you defend the defenseless first. Their life takes precedence over yours. Greater love has no, there's no greater love than this, than to lay down your life for one's friends.
Right.
How much more than to lay down your life for the completely innocent? And that's exactly what Christ did on the cross. Mm. You know, he gave his life so that you and I could have eternal life. But as far as a firearm goes, man, I am a huge Second Amendment guy. I don't flaunt it or whatever. And now I got this shirt. This was from Danger.
Shall not be infringed.
We agree.
This is from Dangerous But Good. There's big supporters of me, which is awesome. I'm super appreciative, but I'm also a history nerd, and I have been listening to a series of lectures on the Revolutionary War. You brought up,
you mentioned, well among friends right now, dude.
Absolutely.
You are well among friends.
You mentioned George Washington earlier, and we talk about being a man. Here's a guy who was under the tyranny of England, and we have kind of everything that we've talked about meshed together so far. He's a believer, a strong believer, right? At one point, he breaks away from his battalion to go and kneel down and pray. And we actually have a guy who was watching that, recording that, you know, listening to his prayer, and actually swapped sides because of what he saw in his zeal for the Lord. And then a guy who lost the vast majority of the battles that he was commanding.
Right.
But as a man, he didn't break down and cry and start sucking his thumb. He kept moving forward because of his faith, because he's a man of God, right? And because of his belief in what would soon be thereafter the Second Amendment. So
yeah, that brings up a really interesting point. And I'm a huge fan of George Washington. We like him in this house. But I have his memoirs from when he was a young this will make you laugh, Brandon. I always like to say that he was the first ever civil affairs officer, because he was tasked by the British to map out the Ohio Territory and to go that direction. And I actually have bound his young his memoirs from when he was young captain into being a colonel. And there was during the French and Indian War, I believe, there was a time when or a battle that he was in where he had two horses shot out from underneath of him, mounted a third horse, and then by the time the battle was done, he removed his coat and he found four or five bullet holes in his coat. And so there's a letter that he writes after this battle where he basically states that the providence of the Lord was with him during that day. And if it wouldn't have been for the Lord, like, there's no way that he would have made it through that battle. And I'm paraphrasing him completely. But it was also said of other people that rode with him that, like, they had never seen a man just that it seemed like was so covered by the hand of God that he just could not be touched. And so Adam, and Brandon, I'll just serve this up to both of you guys because you guys are the cops here. I'm just the dirty Green Beret. But seeing what we saw during that assassination attempt, and looking at the long range ballistics of what we saw, there are a lot of people that are saying that this was like a miracle, like that we saw the hand of God over the former president. I'd be interested in both of your guys' takes on that.
Yeah, I'll let Adam go first as our guest.
Yeah, so I do believe the hand of God was on him, and I see that there's some funky prophecy that some guy put out. I can't say whether that's true or not. I think there's too many kind of bonkers people out there.
I saw the video you're
talking
about. Yeah.
I think yeah, and so whether or not that prophecy is true, yes, I do think the hand of God was on Trump in that situation. You know, I had a buddy of mine who used to say that inside your skull is there's a date etched into your skull, and that's there's nothing you can do about it. That's when you're gonna die. You can live as healthy as you want, or you can live as reckless as you want. That's when you're gonna die. And so the Bible also says my times are in your hands,
right? And it is appointed unto a man once to die.
exactly yeah. And so maybe it's just not Trump's time. I'm not saying that he's being preserved for the sole purpose of becoming president. God's got a purpose for everybody. But,
sure.
You know, Hitler had so many assassination attempts. I'm not going to go and say that God kept Hitler from dying so that he could rule. However, if God is sovereign, if he is omnipotent, if he is all powerful, all knowing, then yes, it's absolutely a God thing. And I believe that 100%. I believe my life has been preserved on multiple occasions. Why? I don't know. But it's because my times are in his hands. So I don't get too deep into the weeds on, you know, God preserved him and this is why. I will say that, yes, God preserved his life because God is on the throne.
Yeah.
I completely agree. And Chris and I even had a conversation about how we feel a lot of people sort of patronize Trump too much and put him on a pedestal and make these associations about him and almost like a Christ-like figure. But when that happened, you know, we kind of confronted ourselves and said, you know, maybe God really does have a hand here on this situation with him and absolutely was there and present. And because when you look at just him turning his head and in that instant is hit in the ear, you know, that's incredible, which is also makes it laughable to me that somebody thinks that this was staged by him. Because if you ever try to fire at a moving target, right, you know, to hit somebody in the ear on purpose, like, I don't know who you'd have to be, you know, to do that. But no, I do. I think that something, and I like that you said too, that it's not saying that he's preserved to be president, because we don't know what the end of the situation here is going to be, whether he will be president at the end of election day. But I do think that that, you know, you could even just say it was evidence that something, you know, there's something for him that he's preserved in that moment, you know, God showing himself in that way to say that, you know, whether you want to say it's America and the United States is on this path of healing and a reckoning and coming back around to the ideals that we are supposed to be trying to attain to as Americans and the pillars of which this country was built upon, those Christian principles that faith and our founding fathers had, you could say all that stuff. And I think that that is a good way to look at it and a hopeful way to look at it. So I totally agree with you, Adam, that I do think that, you know, there was something there over him where, you know, God looking out for him, you know, had angels around him, taking care of him, you know, that kind of, that's what I truly think happened.
Well, you obviously had to, since the security forces there totally dropped the ball. I mean,
they did. That's kind of one of the things I wanted to ask you is what from your like experience wise, looking at some of that stuff, what is some of the things that, you know, stood out to you the most as being absolutely just effed up?
You know, a lot of people have gone over this and made some really good points, and I have purposely ignored the majority of it because I mean, how does a guy get up on a roof like that and manage to get in place with a firearm out in the open and not be confronted? I mean, I will say that the majority of Tier 1 tactical teams, they have a massive amount of technology at their fingertips. Right. They have drones. They have, you know, night force scopes on very nice rifles. They have security checkpoints, right? You have
cameras, electronic security system, you know, all this, all that stuff.
Dogs,
you
know? Right?
Dogs. Yep.
Yeah. So I don't understand why this, it seems like this sector was completely untouched. I mean, it's not that difficult when you are able to look at the aerial view of this thing and say, okay, here's the buildings, here's our vulnerabilities. Let's post some people there. Why wasn't one of our own security people? Why wasn't one of this, you know, Secret Service members posted on that roof? That's a pretty good
because
vantage.
The roof was it was too sloped.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that.
That was the official statement. You know?
Sorry. So, it's so dumb. Like you have to, but that's what the director of the Secret Service said. It presented a, you know, a dangerous situation because the roof was sloped, even though the counter sniper team right behind the stage was on
somebody's basic algebra. Y equals roof. MX plus B, you know, weren't very good at it, I guess, you know, figuring
all
that out.
You can't make this stuff up.
You really can't. They said that there's a potential that there are some Secret Service guys in that building. And that the building that person climbed up on top of, and that may have been why the person who confronted Thomas, what's his name, right, was expecting potentially, this is something Chris and I talked about last night, potentially expecting to see another officer on the roof, which is why they weren't drawn or whatever when they were told to go and inspect who, you know, the roof. But I don't know, this is why there's always a question of conspiracy. This level of incompetence, at the very least, to call it that, this happened, right? If it's all just incompetence and being, you know, being in the federal government and seeing just the type of people that plan these sorts of things, the level of incompetence that you're used to, there's a lot, right? You get used to expecting it. But when you're that incompetent and you're supposed to be the most elite security force in the world because your job is literally to protect the president of the United States, and you have that much of a gap in security that overlap, the oversight that's supposed to be there, the, like you said, the tech at your fingertips to help mitigate, even if you had, you know, not enough people to cover a sector, you know, or security zone that large, you have man force multipliers like drones to cover those sorts of things and to limit and mitigate those risks, right? So I think just the incompetence that was present that day is what opens up the door to a lot of these conspiracies, because people just can't believe that people with that level of training would let something like that happen. And so the mind immediately jumps to, this has to be something else.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're all trained to look for patterns. You know what I mean? And so, and so when you encounter something that doesn't make any sense to you, then you're going to look for the pattern, like the thread that, cause it's like, help this make sense to me, help this make you know, because
right
for me, you said the word frustrated earlier, Adam, and I'm like, I'm beyond frustrated because I'm embarrassed, you know, the entire world saw that, and we're supposed to be the big bad United States, and this is supposed to be the United States Secret Service, the greatest protective security detail in the world. Like, we teach other nations how to run PSD because we're supposed to be the guys. You know, and then you see something like that, and like, it's supremely embarrassing to me. And I think that it puts a black eye on the entire United States. You know what I mean? And so it's like, for me, without getting too far off in the weeds of this particular topic alone, but it's like, I want answers. I want jobs.
Accountability.
Like, I want accountability. I want policy changes, because this should not be allowed to stand.
Yeah. Go ahead, Adam.
These will be videos that you're going to be showing to your recruits years from now.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is an example of exactly what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Every way from the top down, you know.
Man, I've been embarrassed for our country for a long time. So this was no different for me for some of the stunts that our country pulled for a long time. So
that's a really good point. So, you know what? Pivoting just a little bit, I did have another question for you. So I know I asked you about, you know, how you bridge lethality with your Christianity. What does how do you like mentally prepare yourself to, you know, to put on the badge? And because let me provide a little bit of context for me, like going through the military workup cycle, right? Like I have a little bit of time and distance from me to going into deployment, going into combat and then coming home. And I get the luxury of having a little time distance coming home where I can insulate myself again and kind of get back into daily life, especially with the family and everything. But you guys, like you're in and out of deployment every time you step out that door. And I've always found that to be fascinating. So how do you like mentally prepare yourself kind of to put the badge on every morning and go do the thing and then take it off when you get home and like be dad and husband again?
I don't always do it well. I say that. but I will say this. I have, and this isn't to brag, this is something I think everybody should do. I have not missed a day in my Bible since 2014.
Yeah.
And there's reasons for that too.
many.
2014 was an insane year for me. And we can talk about that later if you want to, but that's how I get prepared. I mean, I get up 2 hours before shift to make sure that I get into the Word. And when I say get into the Word, I don't mean that I'm just going to sit down and I'm going to study the words, right? I see the Bible. If it is God's Word, which I believe absolutely it is, then that's how He speaks to me. And so I have a conversation with Him, right? I'm reading His Word and I'm asking Him questions and I'm finishing in prayer. And so that's really preparing me before I ever put the uniform on.
And like how much? So how much scripture are you reading in the morning?
It just depends on the day. Yeah. It may be I generally how I do it is I split it up. I split up the Old and the New Testament. So I read through the entire Old Testament, and at the same time, I'm reading through the entire New. And just given, you know, the size of both, I generally get through the Old Testament about the time I've gone through the New Testament twice. So like right now I'm in Proverbs and I'm in Luke. And so I may read one chapter of Proverbs. Proverbs is a lot to take in, right? Every single verse is a life lesson from Solomon. I may read one chapter. Yeah. I may read one chapter in the New Testament, or I might read three or four. You know, if I'm going through the Psalms, I may read 5 or 10. Who knows? It just depends on the day. And it also depends on, you know, have I successfully in my own mind, I guess, if I successfully communicated with God and prepared myself for the day, you know, is there something in there that I've taken away from this? Or is it like reading through the book of Numbers and like lineage and stuff and I'm falling asleep, you know, then maybe I need to go to something else so I can kind of like be fed.
Leviticus chapter 4. And you're just like, oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so that's, you know, that's how I prepare.
Yeah.
And there's no ritual for me. There's no switch. I know a lot of guys, you know, there's, okay, you know, I'm putting on my belt. It's time to go. And I've got a good buddy of mine who, as he's putting on his uniform, he goes through Ephesians 6, you know, he's putting on the armor and this and that. And I think that's great. I've never done that. That's not to say it's not a good idea, but I just make sure that, you know, am I aligned with God? Okay, then I'm good to go. You know, your will be done. Here we go.
Right.
And then as far as coming home to the family, that part can be kind of difficult. But over the years, I don't know that I've gotten better. Actually, my wife has gotten awesome, and she was always really good. But she has a background in child protective services, so she has seen the kind of junk that I've seen. And right. So she gets it. And so when I come home, if I've had a bad day, she knows it. And she is, she's kind of like, almost like my counselor in a way. Mm. So I've got my faith. I have an incredible woman, and I've got two or three pretty close buddies that check in on me and that I can vent to. But as far as coming home and getting rid of that junk, it helps just to get home. First thing I do is get out of that friggin' uniform, and right. usually it's hitting a workout. And
big
so
mindset thing.
It is a mindset thing. Mindset is massive. And even when I'm not really thinking about it subconsciously, right. I've done this, you know, 16 years. So I know, hey, I've had a bad day. I need to do something on the way home to get my mind right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I've always been like the gym is kind of my clean break from the office to the house.
A lot
so
of
I
people.
Can just like push it all, you know, push out all that stress and all that right. cortisol. Cause like, I like now that the boys 100%. Are, we homeschool, you know, so, I'm not a private in the military by any means anymore. I don't require somebody looking over to me to make sure that I'm doing, you know, hitting the gym and doing that stuff. And so it's like in the morning, typically I'll spend time with the family before I leave.
The PT's an open book test, man.
Yeah, exactly. And then I like to have that break at the gym before I get home, because then it kind of helps me to take off the one hat, put on the other. And I'm like,
it makes such a big difference.
So I completely understand where you're coming from with that one.
Dude, Adam, listening to you, man, you've said a couple of things that you and I have in common. I'll take it back a little bit earlier in the conversation. You had mentioned that you had somebody take their lives in front of you. And I had the same experience. It was a U.S. Army soldier do that in their home. And that is something that was really heavy on me for a very long time. And I'll take it a step further, something you said additionally, because the person I was posted with that day was somebody that I was posted with pretty often. And that was the last day that I was posted with him. We didn't have a big conversation in the car on the way back to the squadron at all about the situation. We both, because of what happened, you know, the military has different protocols. I don't know what you guys do civilian law enforcement wise, but that unit has a chaplain embedded. And when something like that happens, that person's on call and they'll show up and you have to sit and have a conversation with them, right? It's like a feeler check, right? So we both did that. We had like the little both of us and then one-on-one with him. And that was the last time that I was ever posted with him. And he went out to the field and I didn't see him again because he was a reserve unit that was out there and not actually a part of the stationed Army unit, right? And that honestly was the hardest part for me, because even when I've discussed this, and I'll be open with it, right, in therapy as well, because and that is always something that was hardest for me, was not speaking to him ever again about it. And then not even something as simple as not knowing how he was handling the situation, and knowing just in remembering and walking through this with a counselor, like what was going on, the conversations we had, what in that moment I remember, you know, gave me the biggest emotions, and, you know, and not knowing what he was feeling and talking to him. Right. So, but it goes back to what you're saying, Chris, about how you got to get with the boys when something like that happens. And there is obviously the camaraderie, right? But there is recovery in there as well, because you have that deep relationship and you can relate with somebody in that way, especially if that person was there with you, to go to what you said, the trauma bonding happens. And, you know, there is, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? There's, you know, it just brings more peace to you. That's not the word I'm looking for, but there's a peace in being able to relate to them that way and mm-hmm. understand one another, you know? So I've had that experience in listening to you talk about that, and the tribe that you talked about, Chris, you know, that's why, you know, guys that went to Afghanistan in 2001 would rather be back in a foxhole in Afghanistan than they would rather be back at the mall, you know, with their family, because of the camaraderie that they have with those people.
I've experienced that, man. It's simpler, right? You know? So I've definitely said that before. I'm just like, being at war is more simple
right.
than being here. But unfortunately, like as a man, as a father, as a husband, what I've had to learn is like, that's a childish way to feel. Like
it is,
you know, you have to put on your responsibilities and keep moving forward.
Well, and the recovery piece of that is a responsibility, not only to yourself, but it's a responsibility to your family as well. Because right. if you're not okay at home, right, my son, my daughter, they're watching me. My wife is watching me. I'm supposed to be the leader of my family. If I'm not mentally okay because of something that happened at work, or maybe I had a rough day for whatever reason, and I didn't get that decompressed time, it will. And unfortunately, it's a truth. You know, we've all had bad days as dads where, you know, you close the door, tuck them in and say, man, I really could have done a better job today. You know, and a lot of times that is because, you know, come home, I take my OCPs off, and it does. It gets you out of that mindset, throw my running shoes on and go for a run and kind of help clear my mind and get those endorphins going. But the other thing too on that, Adam, you said your wife has experienced CPS, right? And my wife was also an MP. And her and I have that connection. So like, it is such a blessing that I can come home, or I can just say to her, she can tell, right? Some of these stressors, she's been through similar situations. And to have that grace in her to let me go through those things and then come out and be okay and you know, participate in life at home and be functioning. And that has been one of the greatest blessings in our marriage, because we both understand each other in that way. So, you know, listening to you, it's awesome to hear that you have these experiences that mirror mine as well, because I can totally relate to what you're saying. And it is outstanding to have a partner that really gets you like that.
Oh, 100%, 100%. And you know, you mentioned counseling too, and I've done some counseling with a psychologist, and I think that's great. In my opinion, I think mm-hmm. that everybody should have some sort of counselor. It's like maintenance on a vehicle, right? You don't run your vehicle for its entire life without getting an oil change. I think we also should have somebody that we can verbally vomit on. But I don't Definitely. Think that counseling should be a forever thing either, because I
agreed.
You can end up going to counseling for so long that it becomes almost a narcissistic thing where it's, I'm going to go talk to this person about me. It's about me. It's about me. It's about mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. Whereas I find even more benefit, like I said in the Bible, and I don't mean to keep taking it back this direction. It's just, this has worked for me so well that if I don't talk about it, I'm doing God a disservice, you know? And so I want to go to a verse that has helped me a ton. And this is everybody's Christmas verse, right? For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulder. And then we kind of stop there. Right, it's Isaiah 9:6, but we miss this part. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. You know what? Every single person needs a father. You know, a woman has daddy issues. You know it almost immediately, right? You know, a guy has been wounded by his dad because he's got some issues. We've got a father in heaven. And it says even before that, that he's wonderful and counselor, but we don't use him like a counselor, man. Our prayers are like, hey, Lord, I'd really like a new truck. Well, God's not a genie in the bottle, but he is a counselor. And he's not just a counselor. He's one who suffered on our behalf. So you can't tell me that any suffering that you've been through is worse than what he's been through. You know, even Job, when he went through hell, he said, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name. Man, we gotta pour it out to our brothers. We gotta find some brothers with some strong biblical foundation of beliefs, and we gotta pour it out to God. And I didn't know this conversation was gonna be so much about this stuff, but I mean, people have to take care of their mental well-being, because I got, just like you said, I've got kids that depend on me, and if I'm a mess, I'm gonna mess them up, right?
Yeah. That's such a fear. No, and
to tie it back together to something that we were talking about earlier in the conversation about boys versus men, I think what you're talking about there is like maturity in Christianity, or maturity in your faith with God, versus being, you know, what would be like a baby Christian. Because for those people that are kind of stuck, and I'm completely guilty of it. I am only, sometimes I feel like I'm praying more for God to forgive me for dumb things that I've done than I'm praying about, you know, things that I want the, like I'm praying down here when I could be praying about things up here. Like, God, I could be putting serious dubs on the board for you, and I'm still down here praying about my salvation. You know what I mean? And it's like, at some point I've got to get beyond that so that I can be a tool that God can actually use. Right. But I do think that that's what it is, where it's like, if you're mentally or sorry, spiritually immature, then you're going to be stuck at that level praying down here, right? Mm-hmm. Because you don't have the spiritual ears yet to hear, the eyes yet to see, and you're not to a place where you haven't. And it's usually not God's fault. Nothing's ever God's fault. It's usually our fault, but it's like you haven't allowed yourself to be molded into a place where it's like God can take you to that next level. You can start doing these other things.
It's kind of like throwing more weight on there.
What stuck out on the machine from what you were saying, for sure.
Yeah, it is. And man, growing in your faith is a painful process. It's not just a molding, man. It is a chipping away. You know, you got this. God's got this block, and if He's gonna make you Christ-like, it's gonna hurt. And if I may talk about, can I talk about 2014? Okay with that?
Yes. Yeah, dude, please. Everything. Go for it. Yes. Don't limit yourself, man. You talk about what you want to talk about. We'll do it.
So I'm going to throw out a challenge to your listeners because of my personal experience with this. So in 2013, I was listening to a sermon by a guy named John Corson, and the guy's an excellent Bible teacher. I haven't listened to him recently because I kind of thought he got a little soft. I mean, I'm a type A, right? So, but back then he gave this challenge. He said, if you want to grow in your walk of faith, ask God for trials. And I thought, well, that's a pretty stupid prayer. And he even said, you know, be prepared. This is crazy because God's going to answer this prayer. If He's never answered any of your other prayers, He's going to answer this one for you. And I did. I prayed that prayer. January 3rd, 2014 was my deadly force incident. This couple had gone on a series of robberies. They had pistol whipped a gun and coin store owner and robbed him. And they were just on this crime spree. And we ended
Bonnie
up finding
Clyde, them. Huh?
Right, exactly. And they had a pact. They had a suicide pact. And we ended up finding them. Long story short. And they made our detectives, our undercover detectives, they figured out that they were being followed. And so we had to do a takedown. I came around the corner and he had a gun drawn on one of my partners and I hit him with my car. So that didn't bother me too much, honestly, but that was the beginning of here's this trial period. Mm. And I'd like to add a little side note. Apparently, so this guy lived and he went to prison. And a handful of, probably 4 or 5 years ago, I learned that he was working on his degree in ministry. Kind of cool. But
holy cow, wow.
So fast forward to April 4th of 2014. I was patrolling. And so I don't know, what do you call them in the Air Force, Brandon? We have FTOs, field training officer. Is mm-hmm. it the same? Okay, so. Yeah. So my field training officer, in other words, you go to the academy, you get out of the academy, and you spend a certain number of months. You can rotate FTOs or you can end up with the same one. I was with the same guy for 3 months, became very good friends with him. Mm. And anyway, I get this call of a head-on crash 2 miles from my house. And so there I go, lights and siren show up, and this gal who I know because she's a physician, she was the medical examiner. And she came up to me and said, Adam, it's Brian. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she said, and his brother's dead. Well, Brian's brother died years before. Well, I get up there and come to find out it's my FTO was in the passenger seat. His son, his eldest son was driving and killed instantly. And so I had to go navigate all that and give the death notification to grandma and grandpa and just this whole thing. So I got through that whole deal. That's in April. I think it was August, September timeframe. A friend of mine who I actually went through this tactical training with and became fairly decent friends with, his wife died of brain cancer. And I think it was about a month later, we found out my wife had kidney cancer, which that whole deal is actually kind of cool too. My wife was getting kidney stones, never got kidney stones before. She's got all kinds of autoimmune stuff, but that one was weird. Well, the second time she got kidney stones, they were doing imaging again and they found this growth. Hmm. And that's how we figured out it was cancer. It's like, well, okay, so you're going to go through the most painful process in your life, but it's going to reveal that you've got this cancerous tumor in you. So anyway, that was a freaky time for us.
Blessings in disguise sometimes.
100%. But that whole thing was really weird because it was, you know, our friend's wife just died of cancer and here she has cancer. So it's, you know,
yeah.
But blessings from God, man, they removed the kidney and she's been cancer free ever since. Funny story about that. She kept getting kidney stones and the doctor's like, well, that's just going to be a part of your life now because
it sucks
because of these medications you're on, because of this and that.
Right.
And she finally, for some reason, she waited a long time. She finally said, Lord, please take these kidney stones from me. And he did. And she hasn't had one since. And the doctors are always asking,
amazing,
why aren't you getting kidney stones? Because your blood work says you should have them. And she said, well, I prayed.
I prayed. So,
yeah. So, I mean, that would be my challenge. If you don't feel like you have a solid walk with the Lord, because before that, man, I was living for me. I wouldn't say that I had a solid relationship with God. I do now. And it's because of those trials that I went through. So if you don't, man, ask for trials and guaranteed it'll be answered.
Yeah, but see, you know, kind of like Job, you were asking God for the trials because you wanted to grow closer to him, and then God being, you know, because God knows all things from beginning to end. And I don't want to get into like Calvinism versus Arminianism or anything with you or talk about predestination. But, you know, God knowing all things from beginning to end, knowing that those would pull you closer to him, what choice you were going to make through those. You know, I think the average person, when they start going through something like that, because isn't it, it's in one of the Peters, right? Where he says, you know, to count it as blessings when you go through trials, because they, you know, when they're done, they produce in you.
Well, that's in James, but it's essentially, it's addressed in, yeah, it's addressed in by a lot of the different.
Right. But it's like, you know, for you, you decided to run to God when that stuff was going on. And obviously you can see the work that it completed in you and the fruit that you have from it now, where I think the average person, when that happens, they'll usually run the other way. You know, and for me, I always equate it to, cause I was a youth pastor before I joined the Army for about 2 years. And so it's like the dumb analogy that I came up with for my students is I was like, you'll know when you're kind of going the right way. It's video game logic. If you've got it, like if all of the bad guys are coming after you, if you ever get lost and it's like nothing's happening and you're just in a, you know, in a hallway by yourself and nothing's going wrong, then you're probably going the wrong way. Turn around
until the bad dudes.
Right. Yeah, until the bad guys start coming at you again, and then you're probably going the right way. Because it's like, it's always when you're going, like, trying to get closer to God, that's when the devil starts laying all that stuff on. So,
if I could, real fast, Chris.
Yeah, jump
in. Just want to say to you, Adam, that the FTO thing, field training officer, the Air Force is not that cool. We don't spend a lot of time training people, and we're not very good at that in general. We have, you know, your supervisor, whoever, you know, whatever 22-year-old staff sergeant they throw at you when you show up is the one responsible for training you. And typically that person has 10, 12, 14 people they're already looking after. And there's 100 other things they got to take care of, too, on the back end administratively. So there's never one person who is your assigned field training officer. It really is. The Air Force is not very, very good at that. And from having worked with the Army as well, they're not very good at it either. So it's this, you know, federal government, law enforcement and all that. So that's cool that you guys have a field training officer and build that relationship and get somebody to sort of ease you into that. Cause there's not a lot of that in the military. So just wanted to clarify, give your answer on that one.
Well, I'm guessing the Navy's not either. And that's probably why we end up with like Eddie Gallagher imprisoned and stuff like that. But.
Probably not, man. Yeah, no, I've worked with MAs too. And, you know, I don't know. Don't want to disparage anybody.
But we already did.
We sure did. That's right.
I want to throw this one out.
Question, Chris.
Yeah, I want to get your take on this, man, and I'm going to drag you into the culture war just a little bit. So California just passed a new bill. Mm-hmm. It's called AB 1955. It is a bill that will allow schools to sexually transition children without informing their parents. So essentially, if a child's in the school district and they decide they want to go down this path, then underneath the guidance counselors and the school district, they will provide them with treatment. They'll provide them with, whatever they call, quote unquote, gender affirming care, which I hate that terminology, but that's the, mm-hmm. the politically correct terms that you're supposed to use. And they will do all this without informing the legal guardians or the parents that this is going on at the school. Yeah. I was wondering to get your take on that.
So I recently listened to an audiobook, and I'm not a huge Jonathan Cahn fan just for his writing style. I think he's kind of odd. But I will say that Return of the Gods was one of the best books I've read in a long time, and it addresses a lot of the stuff that we're seeing right now. And I 100% agree with – I think we're seeing a lot of the gods of the Old Testament that the pagans worshipped coming back with a vengeance. But I think that the thing that concerns me the most about that is not necessarily, yeah, I disagree with what's going on there. My beliefs are 100% biblical. You know, I believe that, I was thinking earlier today, God created the male and female. And that whole section of scripture is just incredible.
Genesis
Jesus
chapter
quotes
one.
That too. Yeah, and Jesus quotes that too. But I think what concerns me even more, you know, going back to Revolutionary War and that kind of stuff, is we're seeing tyranny on a level that I haven't seen in my lifetime. Because what we're seeing here is government saying, we are now the parents. And mm-hmm. your kids belong to all of us. Even going back to what Clinton, what's her first name?
Hillary. Chelsea,
the other one. Hillary Clinton. Hillary? What Hillary said was talking about it takes a village, but what she was really saying was village is responsible for raising your kid based on whatever national opinion. Whatever government decides is morality. You know, law does not equal morality, and we see a lot, especially the book of Romans, of the times that they were living in. Man, if folks would read Romans chapter 1, it's like reading a letter to the Americans right now. This is where
it's so funny that you brought that up. Yeah.
And so that is my even bigger concern is that the government is trying to take the place of the parents. And it torques me because my responsibility, my God-given responsibility, when my wife looked at that test and says, you're pregnant, I knew from right then and there, God gave me a responsibility to raise these kids up in the way mm-hmm. that they should go so they should not soon depart from it, Solomon says. And the government has never done anything right. How many trillions, $28 trillion dollars in debt? The borrower is slave to the owner. The Bible says, you're telling me that those people are going to tell me how to raise my kid. The people who left $85 billion worth of equipment in Afghanistan. Those are the people that are supposed to tell. I don't mean to bring up Afghanistan, Chris, sorry, but those are the people that are going to raise my kids for me.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah.
So
you're absolutely correct.
That's probably my biggest problem with it.
The people that can't even, keep protectees from getting shot in the head. Those are the people that want to raise your kids.
Exactly. And you're going to tell me what's best for my kids. Yeah.
You don't even know them, right?
Right. They're going to make a decision that my kids can make their own educated decision at 10, 12 years old. And I don't get to have a say in that. And yet, if I deny that, they're going to – is CPS going to come after me?
Yes. A 12-year-old can't even walk into a tattoo parlor and get a tattoo. That's mm-hmm. a permanent decision. Yeah,
I got my first one when I was 17. I had to have my dad sign for it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I – now if I was – I don't want to go into the entirety of it because here's the thing. I think that people need to experience the love of God. and know what that is. But the love of God also includes something that our society has lost sight of, that there is no love without judgment. Mm. I mean, if I just let my kids do anything they want, they're going to grow up to be complete turds. They have to witness the consequences right now.
Right.
Otherwise we are where we are right now.
No, you bring up an excellent point, and this goes back to the niceness versus kindness argument that I was saying earlier. But when I think about what the love of Christ is, right, and especially like the way that I love my kids, I love my sons in such a way that I care what is best for them more than I actually care if they like me. And because of that, it allows me to do things for them that they can't do for themselves, like tell them no. Like pull out the paddle and spank them when they're acting like turds, because you will not act like that when you get older. You will become a respectful person. Something my dad used to tell me when I was a kid is, you will do what I tell you to do. My dad was a pastor, by the way, but he goes, you will respect me either because you love me or because you fear me. And I would rather it be because you love me, but you will respect me, like, regardless. And I've had to learn with my own sons, I put it off for the longest of time because I didn't want to be the dad that just reached for the paddle first thing. But I found out that with boys, man, sometimes it's like you gotta do the old mental reset, right? Mm-hmm. You gotta do the kinesial reset, and then their eyes come back to you, and you're like, there it is, and now we can talk again, and now I have your respect again, and we can move forward. But it's like I can do all that because I care about them so much that it's like I don't care if you don't like me in this moment because I love you that much. Dude, this the government will never love your children as much as you love them and be able to do that for them. They absolutely cannot. They're incapable of it. Yeah. Exactly. And so, because of that, and then Christianity is the exact same way. Like, God loves us more than he cares if we like him. You know, and because of that, it says God punishes those whom he loves because he loves you that much. He wants you to be happy. Well, not happy, excuse me. He wants you to be fulfilled, blessed, and joyful, right? Mm-hmm. But like liking him and being happy all the time, like that's not on that list anywhere.
No, it's not. And you brought up the fear of the Lord, which I want to touch on that real quick because I overheard my wife listening to Candace Owens being interviewed by Don Lemon, I think is his name.
Yeah. Oh, and I heard a little bit of that the other day.
Yeah, so he called himself a Christian, which, you know what,
that's a joke.
That doesn't mean anything to me anymore, you know.
Yeah.
But he called himself a Christian, and he said, but, you know, I don't fear God. I'm not afraid of God. Well, that right there told me, okay, well, you're not actually a Christian then, because Solomon said the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So either he's not a Christian or he's not wise. So
I think it's probably both of those things if you ever listen to Don Lemon talk.
Don Lemon.
Yeah.
Now, man, it's already been over an hour. We're heading on an hour and a half. Adam, I'd like to talk to you about Thin Line Believers, when and where it started, why, and where you're going with it. Tell us what it's all about.
Yeah, we actually, a buddy of mine and I started it. We saw a need for some sort of word getting out to, the people wearing the badge. Because there just wasn't a lot of that. In fact, there's so little of it that it's almost taboo to bring up Christ to anybody wearing a uniform. And I've heard this from a handful of people. And man, it's so refreshing that you talk about that, because nobody in my office was willing to talk about it. There's so many closet Christians wearing the badge. It blows me away. And so we actually started out with a devotional letter once a week. And quickly realized that, well, guys can't really get into that when they're driving down the road, when they're pushing a patrol car. So we thought, well, let's do a podcast. And so we podcasted for quite a while. And just due to time constraints, mainly, that has kind of gone by the wayside. We do one on rare occasions. But then it kind of turned into this deal where I was doing a verse with a short explanation daily, and it has to be under 60 seconds to become a YouTube short. Mm-hmm. So that's what it ended up being. And you know, time doesn't allow for me sometimes to do it on a daily basis, given my extracurricular activities at work, but I still do it because I love to do it. And if I don't share the word of God, man, I kind of get stale in my own walk. I equate it to here in Oregon. I don't know if you've been there, Chris. There's a place called Camp Rylea. It's
oh yeah,
a very small base in Oregon. So I've done plenty of training out there,
and there were Rylea there last year.
Oh, there you go. What's so next to the officers' quarters, whatever you call those, there are these ponds, and they're disgusting. And for reasons I'm not going to share, I have jumped in that before, and they're nasty. Like, if you come out of there and you're not sick, you're going to be pretty lucky. But that's because they have no outlet. You know, there's no outlet. Right. So I can take in as much as the word as I want to. If I don't have some sort of outlet, I'm just going to get stinky and snobby and everything else. But if I take in the pure word of the Lord and I'm sharing it, man, that's like Crater Lake, man. You know, it's just, it purifies me too.
Yeah, good point, man. Well, I got to say, dude, you actually pump me up, because whenever I see your shorts come across my feed, you get an automatic share for me. And God kind of slapped me on the back of the head, because I caught myself like, oh, there's Adam's stuff. And I would share and then not listen to it. And then God's like, really? You're just going to share it without actually listening to what he's saying? And so I'm like, oh, man. So now, I'm not going to lie, man.
You're going to grow a mustache?
I'm on my con leave now, man. So I can, it's going to be like this for a while till we get better. But I want you to know, I've gotten to know you a little bit over the last, like 6-8 months, really appreciate it. I really like what you're doing with Inline Believers, even though, our communities are maybe loosely connected by tactics, you know, at best, and some of the training that we've had. I find your perspective to be refreshing, and you're always hitting on something that I need to hear, and I always appreciate seeing you come across my feed. You'll always get an automatic share from me, man, and because God put it on the back of my heart, now I make sure that I listen to what you're saying whenever you come across my feed too. So just so you know, I wanted to pump you up with that, man. Like, I look for it, I listen to it, so thank
you. Let's see the fist pump. No? You got that seatbelt on, you can't do it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, man.
Well, Adam,
you promised me you were going to do that too. So I'm glad that finally happened.
That's awesome. Well, Adam, where can everybody find you? Are your podcast episodes still out there, or did you take them down because you guys kind of stopped?
No, they still exist. I still have that. I still lose money every month paying for all this stuff, including Riverside. But they still exist. You can search for them just about anywhere. Just look Thin Line Believers, and that includes Instagram, YouTube. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
awesome, man.
That's about it for me.
Awesome, dude. Well, honestly, I feel like that's a pretty good spot to wrap it up. Chris, you agree?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, man. Adam, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us, man. It is always a pleasure to sit and talk to somebody of like minds and sit here and be able to relate and have these conversations. I know I appreciate doing that. I too did not plan on getting into law enforcement at all, and still don't have any plans on doing it in my civilian career. I do cybersecurity now, you know, so, it's always a pleasure talking to people who agree and look at things the way we do through that lens. It's always a pleasure talking to people who don't and look at things, you know, differently than us, because it helps, you know, not keep us stagnant, like you said. Really appreciate you coming on and talking with us, hanging out, and look forward to seeing you on the interwebs, man.
Yeah. Thanks for the invite, and thank you both for your service. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
No, I appreciate you. All right, guys, well, this has been another episode of I Came With Fire podcast. Like I said at the beginning, please check us out on Rumble. Chris and I go live every Friday, 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. Join us, hop up in the chat, join the debauchery, like Chris said, learn something. We'll always talk
way
about
different,
something.
Way different tone from this podcast.
Way different tone.
Way different tone.
Yep. Absolutely. But no, head on over there. I promise you'll at least learn something. Chris and I like talking history. Chris and I like talking and relating things back to things that have actually happened. So there's some sort of lesson in there. And then, like I said at the beginning, please support us by supporting our sponsors. You can use code FIRE10 with Redefine Violence, Skull and Crossbeans Coffee, and the Light Sleeper, and get 10% off your entire purchase being over there. So you guys have a great night. Thank you again, Adam, for coming on, and we'll catch you next time.